I'm John Cain, and this is Let's Talk Native. Hey, I want to welcome all of you to actually the first live broadcast that I've done from Akwesasne. I've had plenty of people on my show, but I've never done a broadcast here from Akwesasne. So pardon a little bit of, we may have a glitch or two along the way. It's not my home turf, so we got a few technical challenges, but all should go well. Joining me is Degaruntege, who many of you, if you've watched my program before, have seen him as a guest on my show. We are here at Akwesasne, and the plan is to talk about a proposed land claim settlement for an area that is somewhere in the neighborhood of 14,000 acres that a group, and I'll explain who that group is, calling themselves the Tri-Council, are proposing as a settlement, unbeknownst to many people in this community, and almost no one in any of the other Mohawk communities or throughout the Confederacy. And that therein lies a problem, because these land deals are not something that one community gets to settle. They aren't something that one nation really gets to settle. These are supposed to be issues that should be taken up at the Confederacy level involving all six nations. And so there's many problems with what's being proposed here. So let me first start by explaining who the parties are. And it must be understood that the parties don't have the history or the identity that a true Mohawk person could claim. I mean, we're talking about band councils and tribal councils. And in this case, we're talking about the MCA, the Mohawk Council of Akwesasne, which is the band council that represents, even though I don't necessarily recognize the border, they do. They recognize the Canadian side of what is considered Akwesasne. And then the Tribal Council, which is the St. Regis Mohawk Tribe. The third party, and I would say the party that is really being used by the other two, is the Mohawk Nation Council of Chiefs, or otherwise known as the Mohawk Nation Longhouse. Not to be confused with the Great Law Longhouse that also exists in Akwesasne. But I can't throw everybody that is a part of this Mohawk Nation Longhouse under a bus, because I think it's select people who are trying to make this deal. But as we'll discuss as we go on, the problem is there aren't enough people opposing them that claim to be a part of that longhouse. And as we've said many times on the show, silence is consent. And we're really doing this show to get enough information out there so people will step up. I'm also going to do a broadcast of this topic on my show, my radio show in New York City and Washington, D.C., which is the Resistance Radio Show. For those of you who follow the work that I do on radio, you know I may have mentioned it last week to some extent. But it's important that people understand what's going on here and who is making this deal, and the fact that many people, almost no one, knows the full extent of what they're trying to propose. So we've got to kind of get into what the history has been. And this is a pretty shaky history across the board. There's always been the position of the Confederacy, essentially, that land claims should be managed at the Confederacy level. The problem is that almost no one has done that. There have been land claims proposed or forwarded by the Oneidas, by the Cayugas, and even the Onondagas, who are one of the loudest voices suggesting that land claims need to be done through Grand Council. They too have initiated their own land claims proposals. And the land claims in of themselves isn't the problem. It's the settlement of them. Because at the end of the day, a land claim settlement is a land sale. And there's no other way to look at it. And in fact, most of these settlements, part of the settlement arrangement is to extinguish any future claim to the lands that are the subject of the land claims in the first place. So this is about extinguishing a claim. On my show in New York, I talked about for many people in New York and Washington, D.C., they understand the idea of gentrification. They know that this is the process of moving people out of a neighborhood, usually through the private sector, people buying up properties and moving people who are oppressed, oftentimes people of color, out of a neighborhood by investing money into those lands. And so this gentrification is a way of moving people off lands. But what's not often recognized is the fact that we have experienced the original gentrification, both through the Removal Act and the removal policies of the United States, forcing us off our lands, not by speculators, but at gunpoint, by armies, by governments, not by, again, not by land speculators. So what we know is the removal period of the U.S. history was clearly intent on removing us from our lands, but so are land claims. And I think it's important that people realize that the settlement of a land claim is by design and by definition, the extinguishing of those claims. So what they're really trying to do is basically buy the land once again. And most of these land claims are usually based on illegal purchases in the first place. And there's any number of ways to define these things, the illegality of these deals. There's their own laws that they have to break to do most of this stuff. So it's real easy to characterize what these things are. But I also have to mention, when we talk about land claims, we aren't the ones making the land claims. It's they who are claiming our land. They know it's our land. That's why they're trying to offer settlements. I mean, so the issue is clear that the land is ours. It's they who are making the claim and trying to do everything in their power, and they have lots of it, to make sure that they can take our land and remove our interest in that land. And, you know, we look at history, and we know, coming to the place we are today, there is nothing more valuable than our land. We know that, by definition, our entire identity is tied to the land that we reside on. It's a part of what defines us. It's a part of literally how we talk to each other. How we when we say Gunyagahaga, we mean the people of the land of Flint. We mean, Paul, any other. I mean, we know that the Oneidas, for instance, Onyota-aga, it's always the people of a place, and we describe that land. So the land is a part of our identity. And without the land, we have to question who we are. But I'll tell you the other thing that raises the question is these guys who are these band councils and tribal councils. Because those very entities are created not by us. They're created by Canada. They're created by the United States or New York State. In the United States, The United States claims there's only one federally recognized Mohawk entity in the United States. That's what they claim, and of course, it's true only to the extent that what they mean by federal recognition. Because look, we know that the United States has had to recognize the Mohawk people, the Mohawk Nation. They've had to because there has been existing mention of us in their history in treaties that may or may not be just, but they still exist. But the fact of the matter is, they have done everything in their power to erase us and then recast us as a tribal council. Canada's done the same thing. So the Mohawk Council of Akwesasne, that's a fabrication. Both of these things serve nothing more than to be municipalization of our people. So those entities are not us. Those entities are creations of the Canadian and federal government. So you have two parties that one is essentially an arm of Canada, one is an arm of the United States, using particular members of these of the Mohawk Nation Council to forward this deal. And they call it a tri-council. But the other thing I have to talk, when I talk about these tribal councils and band councils, they don't represent a people. They represent who they claim to be their members. And by members, I mean names on a list. Maybe names that they've given a card, an ID card that says MCA on it or St. Regis Mohawk Tribe on it. But that's not to say, I mean, I stared clear of using the word citizen all the time, especially when we're talking about our people, because it's like Paul, you've made it real clear. We are a people. We aren't citizens of the Mohawk Nation. All of these words that we see and that we hear used are not our words. It's not just because it's English. It's what those English words mean. So we have to be clear that when we talk about Gunyagahaga or the Mohawk people, we're talking about a people. I mean, again, Gunyagahaga means the people. It doesn't mean the nation. And when we're talking about Rudy Nishuni, we're talking about the people. We aren't talking about these rigid institutions that the United States and Canada have tried to cast us as. And that's exactly what the MCA and the St. Regis Mohawk Tribe are. They really are entities of the Canadian federal government. And they've sucked people along from the other longhouse, because we know that there's a Great Law Longhouse here in Akwesasne. But we also know there's the other longhouse that has oftentimes taken solid positions against settlements of land claims, but now are being used by the MCA and the St. Regis Mohawk Tribe to forward. And in fact, they're actually putting these guys out in front. And so part of it is to utilize them to represent the real Mohawk people, although they clearly are not being transparent with the Mohawk people. So it's a problem on so many levels here. But it's important that people realize that what is being proposed here has never gone before the people in its current form. They oftentimes will refer to old referendum that were done. I mean, in fact, there was one done, what was it, like 20 years ago. And I mean, it's absurd to think that anybody could use a referendum from 20 years ago, knowing that many people have died who may have participated in that referendum. And it wasn't widely participated in the first place. But many people have died, and many people are now adults who weren't able to participate in it 20 years ago. Not only has the demographics shift, but so has the political climate. So has everything in our world has changed in 20 years. We should value land in a completely different way today than perhaps we even did 20 years ago. We know with climate change and migration of people that are happening all over the world, we know that our lands are going to be held in higher and higher value as time goes on. And it should be held in higher and higher value to us. And what happens with these land claims is you are essentially extinguishing. You are essentially ending your attempt to assert the ownership and the occupation of your own lands. And that's forever. That's for not just us here today. It's not just for our children. It's for our grandchildren. It's forever. It's all future generations will be denied the access and the use of that land. So there's no other way to describe why this is so wrong. I mean, I'm wearing a land back t-shirt for those of you who can see me on Facebook here. I mean, the fact that we even have a movement that is being labeled land back, and it takes many forms, but there's no way that you can even talk about this idea of taking land back while you're selling it off in a land claim. I mean, it's about as absurd a proposition as could be, but that's exactly what it is. This is an attempt to get rid of our claim to the occupation and the livelihoods that we hope one day we can rely on those lands for. I mean, as it is, they've shrunk the lands that we're on. We are literally on postage stamp sized pieces of land compared to the lands that we occupied in the past. And it's diminished every time. Like I said, when we talk about gentrification in the city, in the urban environment, we're talking about moving people out of a neighborhood. Here we are talking about extinguishing any claim that we can have to the land in the future. I mean, there's nothing more definitive there's nothing that can be more clear about how much that ends our connection to that land in the future. Of course, I say that, but to be clear, the land is always going to be there. And as long as we're here, even with people trying to make these kinds of fraudulent deals, we are a problem for those who are trying to make these settlements. But we need to be a problem because, as is always said, our silence can be interpreted as approval. In fact, in the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, it is mentioned over and over and over again that any actions that are taken that impact our lives require free, prior, and informed consent. Now, let's be clear here. Most people are not getting prior notice of this deal. Most of this is happening behind the scenes. Most people have no idea what's at stake with this land claim. They don't know who's negotiating on behalf of who. They have no idea. So there's nothing to say that there's informed consent, and there is no consent. The fact that there's a reliance on these old referendum, and it must be made clear here. One of the referendums I saw said 700 people voted for it and 350 voted against it. Well, if 350 people voted against it, that should be enough to cancel it. We are not a people that are bound by referendum. We are people who vie for consent from all of our people. And if we don't have unanimous consent on a land claims deal, nothing should go through. And they're trying to use numbers. And who knows how they cast this referendum in the first place? I mean, we're talking about 20 years ago. Half the people who even managed that referendum are dead by now. So this is what's at stake. This is where this conversation has yet to go, because most people don't know the details of this thing. I mean, we're talking about somewhere in the neighborhood of 14,000 acres, and they're proposing a $70 million settlement. And, you know, here's what the first time I hear a number like this, look, I'm Mohawk, but I live on the Cattaraugus territory of the Seneca Nation. And I follow what's happened with Seneca people and Seneca issues, in particular, what's been going on with some of their gaming issues. $70 million, the Seneca Nation gives that to the state every 6 months in revenue sharing. That $70 million sounds like a lot of money. Million, that's got to be a lot of money. Lots of zeros in that. But it's not. It's a pittance. It is such a small amount. Like I said, the Senecas have given the state $2.2 billion in 20 years of gaming revenue. In their peak production, in their peak revenue years, $70 million is what they were generating for the state, that in a couple of months. But in general, as you average it out, they give over that every year to New York State. And I know, well, so that just needs to be a bigger number. Well, let me talk about a bigger number. The Dundee settlement that the MCA was so instrumental in making happen, that was for $240 million. The Senecas pay that to the state of New York in a year. So everybody who was oohing and aahing over these numbers, you've got to put these numbers in perspective. It sounds like a lot of money, but it's money that'll be gone in less than a generation, in probably less than a decade. It'll get swallowed up. It'll get used in any number of things. In fact, the Dundee suit, the crazy part about that one, most of that money was to be used to buy the land back in the first place. And of course, never, not the whole amount. So you're actually given money that is not giving you money for the fact that you've been denied use and access for any number of years. It's the idea that they're gonna throw a big number that sounds good. You know, I also have to remind people that what happens with these deals is the federal government, which, and I, you know, on this show and other shows, I've talked about this so-called trust responsibility. The federal government wants to claim they have our backs, that they're looking out for us, and they aren't. I mean, this idea of a trust responsibility, as I've said many times, it's about treating us as if we are too ignorant, too incompetent, and too untrustworthy to manage our own affairs. That's what it is. And you've seen it if you watched Killers of the Flower Moon, or if you watched read the book, you know that you saw that on full display, even though it's a film, you saw it on a full display, what it's like to be treated as incompetent. Well, that's exactly what we get treated like in everything from gaming to land claims. And in this situation, they don't have our back. They are on the side of the state. They are on the side of all of the other agencies, including on the side of their puppets, the MCA, the Mohawk Council of Akwesasne, and the St. Regis Tribe of Mohawks. I mean, that's who they are. I mean, they are basically using people who look like us, who by definition and by clear identity are not us. And they're using them to try to make these land claims go away. And there's no other way to explain it. Paul, please weigh in any time. Otherwise, I'll keep talking here.
Wait, I have to wake up first.
Okay, you wake up first.
You know, all these things you're explaining, and that is, I think back, since I was a little kid, listening to all the older ones before me talk about these things, always about our lands and so on. My understanding, as far as I was told growing up, is that we do not make land claims. And my understanding was it was passed in the Grand Council is that we don't make land claim because we know that the land is already ours. It's them that's claiming the land. And they're asking us to sell. And now these different groups are prepared to sell these lands when they have absolutely no right to sell the lands. Because the thing is that they have alienated themselves from being Ugwehunwe. They can't call themselves Ugwehunwe anymore. They have become Canadian and American citizens of Ugwehunwe descent. But yet they're still posing as being one with the land. If they were one with the land, they would not sell. And in our constitution, the Ugwehunwe constitution, is that we do not sell the land. The land that we live upon, this is our mother. None of us have the right to sell our mother. She's not for sale. Unlike the Europeans, we are not into trafficking our mother or any of our women. That's not our ways. We have always been taught from the beginning, even when a young boy starts to become a man, that's the first thing they put him through, is for him to come to an understanding of how precious his mother and all his women relatives are. And today, in our language, he's called Roskonragete. Roskonragete means Rogete Neogora. He carries that soil with him in his medicine pouch, along with his umbilical cord. From when he was born, his grandmother or someone saved it. And the day he went through the first process of becoming a man, that medicine bag was made for him, and his umbilical cord and his medicine and the soil, the earth, was put in that bag. That's why he's called Roskonragete. Because it's then, while he was going through the 4 days of fasting and so on, with nothing but all the natural elements, but he had no food for 4 days and four nights. He had nothing to drink for 4 days and four nights. He had no comforts for 4 days and four nights. And in that 4 days and four nights, he came to understand and appreciate that he had taken for granted his mother and all his women relatives. That's when he started to understand and become that man. And after that, the rest of his time in life, he would be working towards always being truthful and helpful to his people. And that this land, what is his mother, all the women in this land, we call them Gunuhuzagwe'niyo. A lot of people misunderstand that, but Jiniyo Neohuza, Tonine Niodiriho, the Negunungwe. As the land is, the women have exactly the same function. And those young men who become Rodiskonragete, their role model is the sun. And as they get older, they take up the responsibility like our grandfathers. As grandfathers, we become like the grandfathers, the winds and the thunders and the rain. And that we support the earth. We support all female life. It is they who will determine the life that comes on this earth. So who in their right mind is going to sell their mother? None of us have that right. And the thing is that it has always been made clear to us that no matter where we go across this Western Hemisphere, it's still our mother. We could go to British Columbia, that's still our mother. We can go to Nova Scotia, it's still our mother. We can go to Central America, it's still our mother. During the Ice Age, our people went down there. And we were welcomed down there because those people down there are our family. We're all relatives. And everywhere you went, everybody always had the same philosophy and the same principles, is that this land could not be sold.
You're knocking.
I'm sorry.
Hey, look, I've got to apologize. We did have a little bit of a sound problem in the beginning of the show. I'm going to repeat some of what I said early on. Not all of it, but I'm going to repeat some of it. Those of you who are listening to this as a podcast, you'll hear it in its entirety. But I've got to explain. We're here to talk about the land claims that's being proposed by three groups. The groups include the Mohawk Council of Akwesasne, which is the band council. This is the Canadian municipalization of Mohawk people on the Canadian side of the of what they're calling the line they put through Akwesasne. And another party is the St. Regis Mohawk tribe. That's the tribal council. That's the U.S. version of the same thing. It is essentially a creation of the U.S. government as in an attempt to reconfigure who we are and to change our governing systems. The third party is it's some members of the Mohawk Nation Council of Chiefs. I can't really blame it on the entire Longhouse, even though there's sometimes tension between the two Longhouses that exist here in Akwesasne. But we know that there are select members of that council, that Mohawk Nation Council, who are working with the MCA and are working with the St. Regis Mohawk Tribe to propose a land claim settlement. It's lands that that are approximately 14,000 acres of land that they are proposing, for all intents and purposes, to settle for $70 million. And again, I've said this many times before on various shows, but I've got to say, $70 million sounds like a lot of money. But I always had to put it in perspective. And one of the easiest ways for me to put it in perspective is to talk about the Senecas. The Senecas share gaming revenue with the state of New York. And they share $70 million like every 6 months to the state of New York. So we aren't talking about a lot of money. We're talking about a pittance of money. I mean, in 20 years, the Senecas have given the state of New York almost $2.5 billion, $2.2 billion. It would have been more than that, but they withheld some money. $2.2 billion is what the Senecas have given the state of New York in revenue sharing. So when somebody's trying to propose a land claim settlement for $70 million, or even going back to the Dundee settlement, which the MCA orchestrated for $240 million, that's about, on a good year, that was how much the Senecas paid the state of New York in 1 year alone. It's absurd that people got excited about these numbers. When they hear the word million, they just think it's an unimaginable amount of money, and it's not. It's money that they can spend in a heartbeat. It's money they can swallow up. And of course, this $70 million is going to be divided up between the MCA, the St. Regis Mohawk Tribe, and the Longhouse. So they've already got their like hooks in it, and it's already being earmarked. And I think I have to remind people again that what happens, and in spite of the rhetoric, and these guys are putting a lot of rhetoric out, they're talking about, oh yeah, we're gonna own land after this. We're gonna get title of some of this land returned to us. No, you're not. Any land that comes back is gonna, and this includes both on the Canadian side with the Dundee settlement and with this one. Any land that comes back is ultimately gonna go into trust. And I've talked about trust before. That means that the federal government will hold the land for our use and enjoyment. They will still have authority over that land. Now, they'll claim that it's for our use and enjoyment, but at the end of the day, with a drop of a hat, you have to understand that in the U.S., they believe Congress has absolute authority. They call it plenary powers, absolute authority to do anything they want that affects our lives. That's how they passed the gaming law. That's how they've manipulated laws over the years. That's how they've denied land claims. They've done all kinds of things because they have authority to do, and it's not even bound by their constitution or by any challenge. You can't challenge it. I'll cite the Indian Child Welfare Act. The Indian Child Welfare Act was being challenged by a white family in Texas. They were challenging about it being discriminatory, that it was a violation of states' rights, and it was going before the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court never had to consider any of that stuff. They didn't have to consider whether it was a violation of their constitution or a violation of separation of powers and states' rights. They didn't have to consider it. All they had to say is Congress passed it, and Congress has absolute authority over the affairs of Native people. They get to regulate the meets and bounds of our sovereignty, as they've said over the years. So we have to understand that that's the level of control. So when they suggest they're going to hold our lands for us in trust, I'm also going to remind people what that means. That means that we're deemed too incompetent, too ignorant, and too untrustworthy to hold the title to our own lands. That's what it means. That's why they are the trustee. That's why they hold the land for us. Because we are still being considered, since the early 1800s, like that they've managed to diminish us to the point where they deem us as wards of the state. Now, if you don't believe that, then you're not understanding what a trust means. But here's the other thing that's worse about it. They don't even consider themselves bound by what is normal trust law. They don't have to consider us as the primary concern when it comes to any of their trust responsibilities. They still get to consider the national interest first. So we get treated as if we come second to their interest. And that's what we see in land claims. We see it over and over in land claims because they continue to make these deals that do not serve our best interest. They do just the opposite. You know, I want some...
But
go ahead.
They don't consider us as people. Understand that. We are not considered as people. That's why in the United States, we are put under the Department of the Interior. The Department of the Interior deals with all the natural resources of the land, whether it's the land, water, minerals, animals, birds, everything. That's where they've put us.
Endangered species.
Endangered species. And in Canada, you're put under mines and resources. You are not considered people. You are considered as part of the land, part of the natural environment. And the same nonsense that everybody's running to the UN. Everybody say, oh, look, the UN passed the Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous People. But yet Canada, the United States, Great Britain, Australia, New Zealand, none of these countries signed on until it was translated for them that it was concerned Indigenous peoples. But we were not being considered as peoples. We are being considered as a population, like the ducks on the pond or the grass that grows on the lawn. That's in the same category we're put in. That's why they believe they can make any decisions over us. And the thing is, we have never relinquished who we are. And that this same land that is being talked about to be sold has been sold how many times?
And every time illegally, I
mean. That's right. Yeah. Every time illegally. And again, like now they're saying, well, we're going to buy off you 14,000 acres. But the thing is, back in 1796, 1797, 9 million acres were sold here in the United States, in New York State, Vermont, all the way down to Massachusetts. 9 million acres of Ganyankahaga homeland was sold by individuals who had absolutely no right, no authority to do such a thing because that was not part of who we are. We do not sell the land because we don't own the land. We are of the land. We are part of the land. Just like the water, just like the minerals, just like the animals. We were all put here by creation. It's our birthright. It's not privileges. These people today, they're talking... It's about acquiring more privilege. But the thing is, what is being prepared for our children? What is being prepared for our grandchildren? My wife and I now, we're getting up there in age. And all we can think of every morning when we're talking and having our coffee and that is how fearful we are for our children and our grandchildren. What's going to be here for them? And $70 million is not going to cut it. That's nothing. I mean, some of the people in this room have $70 million. You know, what the hell is that?
School budgets. I mean, it's important to put this stuff in perspective. Any of the schools in this area, their operating budget for an entire year is about two or three times that amount. So when we hear $70 million, it sounds like a lot of money, but it really, really isn't. And it's the kind of money and a level of money that can be blown through in a heartbeat. And you'll never see it. Here's the way this stuff gets cast. It's the best deal you're going to get. We've been hearing this for years. Every time we fought a tax issue, every time we fought an issue, the whole idea was, well, we'll negotiate and get the best deal we can. And that's the way this is being pitched by, again, I want to remind people, they call this trio of entities the Tri-Council. The MCA, the St. Regis Mohawk Tribe, and the Mohawk Nation Council of Chiefs. They're calling themselves the Tri-Council. But they aren't answerable to the people. In fact, the MCA is doing everything they can. In fact, somebody just tried to sue them for refusing to hold a referendum. But referendums aren't our way anyway. But again, there are people that are a part of every one of those groups. They're members of those groups that stand in stark opposition to what they're doing. So they're doing this stuff against the will of the people. They find numbers where they can. Again, the St. Regis Mohawk Tribe did a referendum 20 years ago. And 20 years ago, 700 people were in favor of a land claim settlement. I don't even know that it's this settlement, because this thing has been evolving over 20 years. So 20 years ago, 700 people said they agreed with a settlement. And about half that number, 750, were against it. That alone should have been enough to stop it. That's not a consensus. And that's who we are as a people. We don't use this referendum process anyway. But this has never gone through. I mean, even though the Mohawk Council of Chiefs claims to be a longhouse, they didn't go through the longhouse to do this. They didn't go through the system, the Guyana or Goa, to do this. They did this just like a tribal council. That's what they acted like, and that's what they are. That's what they become. They are part of this group, and they are all serving New York State, the United States, and to some extent Canada. And it's all an attempt to reduce us to essentially a municipality. Look, I've heard people say all the time, well, are you kind of a nation within a nation, or are you included in what they call the system of federalism? You know what federalism is? Federalism is where they have a hierarchy of governance. The federal government, state government, county government. And some people try to suggest that somehow we represent some sort of governance in between state and county levels. And it's simply not true. We are not beneath the state. In fact, we're not beneath the United States. This is what they've done. And they've done it for 200 years. They have been trying to reduce us to exactly what Degarunda Gay just said.
They call us quasi-sovereign.
Well, and even that, they call us domestic dependent nations. And that's using the word nations in the most obscene possible way. Because they're trying to say that we're dependent on them, that we are wards of the state. You know what wards are? People with mental deficiency, people with handicaps, people who cannot take care of themselves. You know, we hear the word sovereignty thrown around, and we use the word, but we oftentimes have to say, look, let's make sure when we're using that word, we're defining it. Because the sovereignty comes from Europe. That's this notion that God bestowed upon a select few families that they were, with the permission of God, to get to rule over other people. And I mean literally stand above as monarchs over people. So today when the word sovereignty is used, we talk about it being the authority of a people. But you always explain to me this the word for not just the right, but the responsibility to carry ourselves.
Yeah, we say, I de watatawi, I unkwa nagera sera. You know, and that we carry ourselves. We are not dependent on no one else. We are not slaves to anyone. That we are a free people. And that the thing is that there are no free people in the United States. Even though they say we're free, they're not free. They're constantly having to pay the hierarchy, constantly having to pay them taxes, taxes, taxes. And it's never going to stop. They're never going to own anything. They only have use of things. And you only can use these things if you pay for it. You even to have a car, you got to pay the taxes on the car. To be able to drive the car, you have to get a license. And you have to pay property taxes on everything you own.
To fuel the car. I mean, you're paying an absorbent amount of taxes with every gallon of gas you put into that thing. So to operate it,
and your homes. You can work, you can buy land, but you can never own the land. And they say, oh, you have a title, a deed. But no, you have that as long as you pay. You have to pay on your house. You have to pay school taxes. Even though all your children are grown up and gone and have probably grandchildren of their own, you're still going to have to pay the tax. If you don't pay it, they put you on the street. And whoever can pay that is the one that's going to take over everything you've worked for all your life. So you're always a slave. And that they call you a citizen. But a citizen is only a step above slaves. Because slaves did not enjoy privileges. Citizens have privileges as long as they pay for it.
Well, and it's one of the reasons I hesitate to use the word citizens when we're talking about our people, because citizens, by definition, implies a subordination and a duty and a loyalty to a government. And that loyalty and duty always comes in the form of taxes. It always comes in the form of the responsibility that you have to, that you owe them. So it's important to look, when they use, they don't, you know, they don't actually say free. You know what they say? They say freedom. And there's a difference. I mean, freedom is one of these complicated words because it has both the word free in it and it has the word dom, which is about domination.
Yeah.
I mean, when you speak of our people, you would talk about a free and independent people. That's what we always were. And they knew it. And they said it. And they marveled at the idea that we could have lives that allowed us to live a level of free, as a free and independent people. And that's what they saw our lives, and they saw the opportunities that they could get, because they thought all of that free and independent status that we had was because the land provided us with such wealth. And that's why they've gone after our land ever since.
And that's why in our language we say they were that they were near. And that we are free. We are free to exercise what was provided to us in the most natural way, which is our birthright. And the watatawi, the effort we put into it, we can take care of ourselves. We do not need anybody to take care of us. But it's become very hard for us to take care of ourselves. It's hard for us to develop an economy and so on, because they have taken away our understanding of how we as a people have always worked together, and that we always took care of one another. And so the thing is, it's hard. And then the thing is, by removing us from our lands and putting us on these little fly specks, and they come into those fly specks and they put a seaway through here that benefits them. Now, when did our people benefit from the seaway going through our homelands? We've never benefited any which way at all. Everybody else in the world, every corporation in the world is making money on the use of this land, but not us. Today, we are prevented from traveling freely on that water. We can't go from here to Gawonog without some law enforcement coming over there and stopping us from traveling freely the way we did since time immemorial. We have to stop and think what this is, because these are going to be the final nails in our coffins to bury us, to erase us from the land. We'll still be roaming this land, but not as who we were supposed to be. We are going to become part of their system with no choice. And the land that is being sold, like was mentioned, we're going to have to buy land back and put it in trust. It's got to first go to their system, then it can be bought. Taxes need to be paid on it. Then it goes to our people to be able to buy it. But we have to buy it and go to the councils. And the councils, in turn, turn it over back to the federal government. And those lands become part of trust lands, crown lands. And that, so it never becomes ours. So the deal that is good was good for them. They got our land. They paid us to justify what was going on, and then we have to give them all that money back. And well, then they're going to tax our land.
And I got to talk a little bit more about what trust land means, because this June, and I've talked about this on my program, this June is the 100th anniversary of the Indian Citizenship Act. And that is when the U.S. Senate, or Congress, I should say, House and Senate, declared that we were U.S. citizens. So when you put that into perspective, and you'll see how I connect this back to trust land. Trust me, it does connect. For 100 years prior, they had been trying to reduce us as wards of the state. That's what they said. That's what the judges have said. The Supreme Court said this thing. They did it in the name of the doctrine of discovery. They did it when they created what they called the trust doctrine, where they claimed to be our trustees. They did it when they incorporated another legal doctrine called the plenary powers doctrine, where, as I said, Congress claims to have ultimate authority over our lives. They did all of these things. And then when they ended slavery and they passed the 14th Amendment, and they claimed that all the slaves essentially were now made U.S. citizens with full rights of U.S. citizens, although that wasn't even true at the time, they knew that it still didn't include us, because when they talked about that, the citizenship part of the 14th Amendment, they said all people under U.S. jurisdiction. We weren't those people. And they knew it. They knew it in 1865. And they also knew it in 1924. Because when they declared that we were U.S. citizens, they didn't have the right to do so. In fact, internationally, that was already considered a war crime. It was called denationalization, the idea of stripping away somebody's national character and imposing another nation's character upon them. 10 years later, they passed the Indian Reorganization Act. And you don't need to remember the dates, but just let me, but bear with me. So the Indian Reorganization Act was this attempt to redefine who we are. First, it was geared almost entirely in the offset to end what they call traditional governance and try to get everybody to follow an American-like constitution as far as tribal governments were concerned. But it was an attempt to redefine us as a tribe, band, or nation of Indians subordinate to the laws of the United States. That's what the Indian Reorganization Act did. But even that didn't do it, because when it came to this trust land thing, there's a catch to it. Who can have land held in trust for them? I'll tell you who. Because they said, if in 1934 you weren't under the jurisdiction of the United States, you are not entitled to have land held in trust for you. That's a federal law. That's a part of their trust land, their whole fee to trust system. Only those individuals who the United States says is under the jurisdiction. And you know what? And if you want to have land held in the trust for you, if you're one of these people that are trying to get your land back, they'll actually put the burden on you to prove to them that you were under the jurisdiction. Not now. They're saying you need to prove that in 1934 that you were under U.S. jurisdiction. That's their law. I'm not making this stuff up. You can look it up. They flat out said that if you can't prove that you were under U.S. jurisdiction in 1934, you're not entitled to have land held in trust for you. So it comes back to the question. Who gets to hold this? Who's having this land put in trust? Only those people that this tri-council is saying is completely under U.S. jurisdiction? I mean, they make claims, oh, yeah, the state won't have any jurisdiction over it, and they'll have no ability to tax and that kind of stuff. The state won't this and the state won't that. But the federal government is going to hold that land in trust for you. And you know what? If you don't acknowledge, and if you're ever put to task, prove that you were under U.S. jurisdiction in 1934, you're not even entitled. You're not even entitled to have land held in trust for you. So I think it's really important that people understand that when they say trust, there's a lot that's hidden in the meaning of that whole so-called trust relationship. Well, yeah, and there's no question that they know this stuff. I mean, they know this stuff, but you know, they'll never put that out front, and neither will the Tri-Council, neither will the MCA, the St. Regis Mohawk Tribe, or that other Longhouse. I mean, I've listened to people that claim to be traditional, you know, claim to be Confederacy all my life, talk about maintaining sovereignty and continuously standing up for their own identity. And then I hear them in the next breath say, well, go vote in the next election, or serve in the armed forces, or be proud to be a U.S. citizen. Look, there's a whole lot that we need to confront at some point in our lives. And among the things, and I talk about it all the time, Matt hears me talk about this all the time, is identity. Who are we?
That's right.
If we aren't looking at that Guyana to go, if we're not looking at this circle wampum behind us here and knowing that we have a place within that, then who are we? Are we St. Regis Indians? Are we band members? I mean, maybe you're in a band, but that's a whole other thing. But who are we? Are we going to assert that we are not mere descendants of a once proud, free, and independent people, but we are those people? Well, we can't make that claim. If we're going to say that they're going to hold our land in trust, the very act of doing that is telling the world, yes, I'm theirs. I am their citizen. I have committed myself to defend the U.S. Constitution above my own, above the Guyana to Goa. above my own identity.
You know, when I was a boy, I heard an expression that the old people used to always say. There was always people who were trying to get some kind of settlement on the lands. They were always ready to make a deal of some sort. And that they were so eager to try to, what they believed was, improve themselves by becoming like their oppressor. And so they all jumped at everything the government offered. And the people who resisted, they called those people the Hadith Nat Sahyadun. The Hadith Nat Sahyadun. It means they have writing on the ass. And that they have a number now, and it's stamped on their ass, and it means the property of the United States or property of Canada. That's what that meant, the Hadith Nat Sahyadun. And people resisted. And because they were the resistors, those are the people that had to go underground in order to try to maintain whatever they could of who we are. And only in 1924 did they finally lift the ban. And our people came out of the woodwork, and we started putting up symbols of who we are, like buildings we refer to as the longhouse. But the thing is, those buildings aren't the longhouse. They were only buildings where we could gather, we can counsel, we can stay out of the rain, the snow, and the cold, and that we could do our Thanksgiving ceremonies. But today, these people are using that because they all congregate at a building. They're saying that they're the nation. And the thing is, that's just a building. You can hold those gatherings inside a garage. It means nothing, that building, other than it's a shelter. And again, we've been reminded always that our home, our mother, is from where the sun rises to where the sun sets. And that that will always be our house. And these people are trying to sell it for a few measly dollars. And I have to question, do these people love their children? Do you love your children that you would allow someone to sell the birthright of your children in a most illegal way? Even by their laws, it's illegal. By international law, it's illegal. By our own ways, this is illegal. In every constitution in the world, it's illegal. No other place do you go in the world where people are trying to sell their lands, trying to negotiate a settlement on their lands. In fact, in those countries, in the past few months, we've heard of 30,000 Palestinian people killed because they're trying to keep their homeland.
And we're trying to give ours away.
Yeah, we're trying to give ours away. They're starving to death. Their babies are dying in their arms, but they will not give up.
They're being blown apart. I mean, and to be clear, who's providing the weapons for that? The United States.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's really easy to slip into a conversation about Israel and Gaza because it's all related. But you can't make that point any more clear when you say there are people dying for their lands in other places while we've got a group of men primarily trying to sell. You know, I also got to say something else. I mean, you mentioned the United Nations. One of the things that invariably happens this week they were doing their UN permanent forum on indigenous issues. And look, I've been down there. And I went down to Washington when they were debating the United States taking another look at the UN Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. And the first day of that gathering was listening to people mostly bitching about what they called sacred sites. And I got to tell you, I don't know what part of your mother you consider more sacred than the other. And frankly, I didn't want to think about that. But it's absurd to suggest that there's some parts of our land that we think are sacred while the rest is what? Something we can just give away? We get sacrifice? We can give it away for what? For peace? For a few dollars? I mean, I think it's important that people realize that when we start to try to put value or diminish the value of land to such a point that we're willing to give it up, that we're literally stealing it from our children, as Degarundage was suggesting. We're literally taking it from our children because we don't know what the next 10 years. I mean, again, it's absurd to suggest that they did a referendum 20 years ago and they want to use that as some sort of proof of some sort of consent from the people here. It's absurd to even suggest that. But by suggesting that, you're simply writing off the future of your children. That's exactly what you're doing. You're writing off the future of your children. Hey, look, I know we had a little bit of sound problem at the beginning of the show. I saw somebody had submitted a question. I mentioned early on that, and look, we're not bound by clock here. I mean, I was planning on doing a one-hour show, but we can go as long as we need to go on this subject, especially since we lost a little audio in the beginning. It was asked about how it is that you got the MCA, the Mohawk Council of Akwesasne, the St. Regis Mohawk Tribe, and this one, or at least a part of this one longhouse in Akwesasne, trying to make this deal. How is this just an Akwesasne deal? Well, I'll tell you how it is. It isn't. This, and it's not even just the Mohawk people. This is a Confederacy issue. And you know, the worst part about it is the claim that they're making here is not even based on being Gunyagahaga. It's not even based on being a part of the Six Nations of the Five. It's based on some fraudulent document they call the Seven Nations Treaty, which has been blown out of the water time and time again. Let me tell you a little story about the Seven Nations Treaty. A few years back, the casino up here in Akwesasne was written up for violations of OSHA. Do you guys remember this? I got a room full here, so. Yeah, they were written up for a violation of OSHA. And they tried to claim that OSHA didn't apply to them. And they tried to use the Canandaigua Treaty, as a matter of fact. And the courts ruled against them. They were said, nah. They were trying to use the Seven Nations Treaty as well. And the court said, 7-8, you're not a part of the Haudenosaunee. You're not a part of the Six Nations. Not if you're claiming the Seven Nations Treaty. So the very people who are using the Seven Nations Treaty and some of the language of that as a part of this land claim, they've already removed themselves. And again, identity. They've already compromised who they are. The Seven Nations Treaty was more about church than anything else. In fact, the other word for those people were the Praying Indians. They weren't the Mohawk Nation. And again, I hesitate to use the word. But again, I got to say, we're talking about this today so everybody becomes somewhat aware that there's a pending settlement here. I mean, on May 8th, they're going to submit all of the approvals, especially the ones that they're claiming they've gotten from their own people, which is bullshit. And they're going to submit it to the other parties, which include the New York Power Authority. Why is there a power authority involved? Your guess is as good as ours. But they're going to submit this to New York State, to the two counties, and to the federal government. And they're going to say, look, we got all our ducks in a row. We got all the permissions from our people. No, you don't. And they're going to do it with the claim that they somehow, this tri-council, has the authority to represent the Mohawk Nation. So there are other Mohawk communities. And there's... They're scattered across, much of our homelands here. So it's really, really important that people realize that there are many Mohawk people who have no idea what these people are doing. It's not just an Akwesasne deal.
It's not just a Haudenosaunee deal as well. The thing is that our mother goes from the Atlantic to the Pacific. It goes to the north, and it goes to the southern part of the Western Hemisphere. All Ungwehungwe have the right to intervene and say that this cannot be. It's just like in BC, we have every right to step up to the plate and tell the people in BC who are trying to make land settlements out there is that they have no right to do this. We can go to Mi'kmaq country and approach the people who want to make land deal and tell them they have no right to sell this land. It's not theirs. It is not their private property. We are of the land, and everywhere you go, we always refer to the people in accordance with the land. We call ourselves Ganyagahaga, but we are just the Ungwehungwe that lives in the land known as Ganyag. We're Ungwehungwe, and that's why when we refer to other peoples of this, the original peoples of this land, We always call them Ungwehungwe as well. Sometimes we'll say, Tigunghungwe Sherad. We refer to them the same way as we refer to ourselves. And that we call them Gahundakekowa Nehronu. We call them Uchada Aga. We all this because of the characteristics of the land. That our cultures and so on was based on our environment, how we sustained ourselves and so on. But we're all Ungwehungwe. We're all Ungwehungwe. I don't care if you want to call yourself a Cree or Ojibwe, Dene or whatever. We're all Ungwehungwe. And even in their languages, they have the same translations. When you say Anishinaabe, it's the same as saying Ungwehungwe. You say Dene, it's the same thing as saying Ungwehungwe. You say Lakota, it's the same way as saying Ungwehungwe. We all refer to each other, ourselves, in that way. And so when we talk about this land and the deal that somebody, a small segment, has the right to sell our lands, because this has to be stopped. Because if it's allowed to happen, it's going to be used as a cookie cutter to all the Ungwehungwe across this hemisphere.
Well, and look, this is something that Ungwehungwe, you know, across Turtle Island have experienced. And it's been dealt with in different ways. But if you sit here and you think, I mean, who remembers when the Lakota agreed to get paid for the Black Hills? Nobody remembers, because it didn't happen. Because when they were offered money, they rejected it. They would rather maintain the dispute over the land than to sell it off. So they're taking the stand that these guys, this tri-council, is refusing to do. These guys are going to surrender land. You know, I have to sometimes cite the Seneca situation again. I live out in Cattaraugus, so I'm familiar with some of what they've gone through. Now, what happens with a lot of stuff is this stuff usually has some foundation in leases. And I got to tell you, the idea of a 99-year lease is absurd. I mean, for one thing, by and large, people don't even live that long. So the idea, and white people don't either. So that they could enter into a 99-year lease is absurd. But I'll tell you, it didn't even stop there. Some of these white folks tried to swindle our people by entering into 999-year leases, which is even more absurd. There's a municipality in Western New York called Salamanca. And Salamanca exists on what is considered the Allegheny Territory of the Seneca Nation. And like 95% of the city is within that territory. And it was on a 99-year lease. And when that lease was coming up, the claim that the municipality and the state and the counties all tried, well, that lease was like a sale. No, it's not. And of course, they use the longevity of those leases to try to cement that these leases are like sales. But that's not the way they were negotiated. They were negotiated, or we were assured, oh, the land is still yours. The land's still yours. The land's still yours. Until that 99 years comes up, then we're going to pretend that lease was like, they're hoping that we, look, anytime they entered into something that long, they thought we'd be gone by the end of that lease term. They didn't think that we'd even be existing anymore, because that's what they were trying to do. They were trying to eliminate us. But I got to tell you about what the Senecas did. And we could argue whether the Seneca Nation had to do this on their own or not. But let me explain what the Senecas did. When they had to address this 99-year lease, they didn't give up Salamanca. They didn't boot everybody out. But they insisted that that land is, that municipality is on Seneca land. That's what they insisted. And today, any Seneca can go into the city of Salamanca and buy a piece of property. And actually, they're not actually buying the property. They're actually buying what they call the leasehold improvement. They can buy a property and take it off the municipal tax rolls. And it reverts back to clean Seneca title. I mean, it's clean Seneca title anyway. In fact, the white people, they don't just pay taxes to the municipal government of Salamanca. They have to pay a lease to the Senecas. Some of those people were pissed about this settlement. In fact, they burnt their homes. They said, "I'll burn my place before I'll give it to I'll pay a lease to the Senecas." So that's, the Senecas didn't sacrifice any of that land title in the renegotiation of the Salamanca lease settlement. They got a certain payment, which probably wasn't enough for having been screwed all those years, most of that 99 years. But they were also, they negotiated on the very end of that lease settlement, they negotiated the land acquisitions clause. And the Senecas today can reacquire lands in their Aboriginal territory with the funds, supposedly with the funds that they were appropriated in that settlement. And it was like $60 million, not nearly enough, but depending on how you go about buying land, you can buy a lot of land for a buck if somebody's willing to sell it for your buck. So, I mean, you can talk about how Disney acquired all the land around Kissimmee. But anyway, they were able to buy lands and take it back into original title, not trust land. They were able to buy that land back, or pay the white people to leave, as my friend Sugar Montour used to say. They could buy it back, and they could revert that title back to original Seneca title. That's how all three of the Seneca casinos are on acquired lands. Even the one in Allegheny, the one in quote-unquote Salamanca, that was off what was considered off of their Allegheny reserve. But they bought it, and they took it back in, and they built a casino on it. They did it in Buffalo, and they did it in Niagara Falls. And again, every day, a Seneca has the opportunity to take land off of the tax rolls in the city of Salamanca. So that's how they settled the lease. Now, I realize that this is not exactly the same deal, but you know that this stuff all comes from fraudulent leases. That's how white people got in these lands in the first place. And you know what? When they're offering a settlement for this land, they're not even considering the value of not only the land, the tax money they collected on that land for all of this time, fraudulently, but they're also not assessing any of the loss that we had in not having access to that land. So again, $70 million, it is just a pathetic number. And it's almost a pathetic number regardless of the volume of the land, because it's a forever deal. And that's what can't be lost in this. So I know tomorrow there's every Sunday in Akwesasne at what we call the Great Law Longhouse, there's their Sunday meeting. And this is going to be discussed at that meeting from what I understand. But I got to tell you, everybody throughout the Confederacy, but in particular Mohawk people, better know what these guys are up to. Because you in particular need to hold, not just in this community. In this community, sure. But if you're in Ganawage, Gunyange came out with a very strong letter on this thing and said these people have no authority to do this. And they were even addressing the St. Regis Mohawk Tribal Council or the MCA. They were talking about the other Longhouse. They don't represent the Mohawk Nation. They couldn't have made it clear. And they wrote a synopsis of the history involving the Seven Nation Treaty and all of that stuff. They couldn't have been more clear. But we need Gunawage. We need Oswego, we need Wata, we need Gunazodage, we need Tandanega, we need everybody to weigh in on this stuff and demand that, for one thing, this council, this Mohawk Nation Council, cease to fraudulently represent that they represent the Mohawk Nation, because they don't. I mean, they don't even represent a large segment of Akwesasne.
And the thing is that it's not just happening here in Akwesasne. In Kahanawaga, for years they've been dragging this dead horse around they call the seigniory. And they've been trying to settle on that as well. In Gunasadaga, they're going through the same thing. Their community became checkerboarded. And no different than what happened to people down in the Southwest with the Dawes Act. And how their communities, how they lost their lands. And nobody even stops to think of how did the Menominees and Winnebagoes lose their lands. This is all the same thing. It's the same program for all of our peoples. And that's why it's important to get all of our peoples on board to put a stop to these traders who are giving away. They're not even selling it. They're giving it away. Because like you mentioned, the amount of dollars they're talking about is nothing. They print dollars every day, and it's worthless. You know, and I hear these people think that, oh, we're going to live well. For how long?
Never. That's, I mean, right. It's never going to result in enough money to do anything of any consequence. It is such a small amount of money. I mean, and I'm not, we're not saying this because they need to up the ante. We're not saying put more money up. No. We're saying it's wrong in any way. But the fact that they're offering such a small amount is, I mean, it should be, we should view it as the slap in the face that it really is. We should really be perfectly clear that what they're doing is, I think that's you.
Not me. I got mine on silence. Yeah, it is me.
Paul, your ass is ringing. You know, we told everybody here to silence their phone, and except for the guy sitting beside me, apparently.
No, I did. It's on. Look.
No, you can only hear it right now. I'm only kidding. Yes, just so people know, this is streaming live on Facebook as a video. After the stream, it stays on Facebook as a video. But I'm taking the audio, which isn't going to have the glitch we experienced on the video. I'm going to take the audio, and I'm going to post it up as a podcast. For those who are, and I know I've got new listeners paying attention to this because of the issue. I do a radio show in New York City called Resistance Radio. It airs in New York City on Thursdays and in Washington, D.C. on Fridays. I'm going to cover this issue in this week's show as well. I take the audio from that show and from what I do here, and I put it up as podcasts. So if you search, if you ask your smart speaker, or if you search Google or whatever for Let's Talk Native with John Cain podcast, you will be directed to whatever podcast platform that you can hear the show. It'll get posted today. So it'll go up as a podcast. Now, I'm also going to take this video. I'm going to try to fix what we screwed up in the beginning. I'm going to take this video, and I'm going to post it on YouTube. For what? Well, no, we just didn't plug the audio in properly. So that's, again, this isn't normally how and where I do this show. So, you know, I'll ask for forgiveness, I guess, for whatever glitch we had. But the audio from the show will be available, and I'm going to do more shows on this. Part of the thing is we wanted to do this show just based on the evidence that I had a chance to read that's from the Tri-Council. We're not in any way, shape, or form trying to represent a position of the Longhouse here in Akwesasne. They have yet to weigh in, they have historically, but on this settlement, the Longhouse, the Great Law Longhouse, has not passed a resolution yet. So we're not trying to represent the Longhouse in advance of their reaching some resolution. But we wanted people to know this. And there is a meeting tomorrow at 10 o'clock at the Longhouse, as I understand. So if you're in the area, you should come, because you're going to hear the people who've done the research. There was a number of people who gathered all of this information. And they provided it to me. They put it in a bit of a summary. In fact, this collection of the information was even sent down to Grand Council. And you know, look, I wish we had a Confederacy Council that was functioning properly, and we don't. But we still have attempted to use that system over and over and over again. I know, Degarundige, you and I have been down there more times than we care to think about, and you were going there long before I was, and many people from here have been down there. And the problem is, there's so many ways the so-called Grand Council manages to avoid doing what they're supposed to do. But this was submitted to Grand Council last month, and part of the issue was to ask Grand Council if they ever authorized the Longhouse that's claiming to be the Mohawk Nation Longhouse, the Mohawk Nation Council of Chiefs, if they've authorized them to pursue land claims. And they said, no, we haven't. They are not authorized. So Grand Council didn't pass a clear-cut resolution, but they answered that question. And that answering that question alone suggests that it suggests that they know something is unlawful or illegal underfoot here. So that's why people need to know what's happening. And look, you have the opportunity to respond. You know, I've got a little wristband here, and you can't see it, but it says, use your voice and change the world. And it sounds like a trite expression. But the significance of that statement is that if you remain silent, then you are consenting to what they're doing to you. So everybody who, look, whether you know anything about this or not, and if you don't know about it, it's on you to find out about this stuff. So I'm telling everybody who's listening to the show, pursue whatever through whatever means you can to find out what they're doing here. And speak up and be heard. And if being heard isn't enough, then we've got to figure out the next action. And I'm not suggesting what it can be. You can use your imagination. But we have been through this kind of thing before. We've had illegal governments that have tried to represent us and do terrible things to our communities, to our children, and to our future. And we can't keep allowing to happen. Again, we talked about the UN Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. I'm not a fan. It's not a panacea. It doesn't do anything that it's supposed to do. In fact, the United States, Canada, Australia, New Zealand voted against it. Against it. They didn't even, you know, they didn't abstain from the vote. They voted against it. Why? Because they want to remain in stark violation. Now, Canada, they're trying to alter the whole declaration and say they're adopting it into their law. No, they aren't. They're changing that notion of free, prior, and informed consent, and they're trying to change it to consultation. Consultation is not consent. Consultation is claiming to allow you a seat at the table to listen to what they're deciding about you. And if you remain silent, and frankly, even if you don't remain silent, they're going to do whatever the hell they feel like doing. Why? Because they believe they have the authority and the power to do so. And the more silent we remain, the more we allow them to continue to do it, the more they're going to continue to do it. That's the bottom line. So first off, you have to be informed. You cannot just sit on the sidelines on this thing. You know, Dagarundige, you explained to me many years ago about why we stir the ashes in our ceremonies. And if I get this wrong, the way you explained it to me is that there's almost a twofold part of that. Part of it is we want to make sure that those embers that have gone silent or dormant have a chance to shine. They have a chance to breathe the air and illuminate. And again, Matt always talks about the spark. So we want to let those embers that have gone quiet to be energized and to be livened up. But I'll tell you, it does something else too. And this is the point that you made clearly to me. It's also to make sure that those that sit on the sidelines and choose to remain dark while things are going on, only to bitch about it later, that they're not allowed to do that. We stir those ashes to involve people, but also to not let people to skate and to avoid a commitment or a responsibility. People are always quick to talk about, oh, my rights, my rights, my rights. This isn't about rights. This isn't about land rights. It's not really about land claims. It's about responsibility.
Yep.
And if we don't accept the responsibility and hold these people accountable for what they're doing and object to it and stop it, like I said, May 8th, they're going to submit all of their so-called approvals with the intent that they're going to do a signing ceremony on July 11th. They think they're going to seal this deal in July.
See, if we
right after the 4th of July or next week after that, they're going to sign this deal and they're going to say, there, look at the great things we did.
If we don't speak up and that we can't cry about it later and say, they sold us out, we sell ourselves out by not saying anything, by not doing anything. We're just as guilty of the ones who are selling the land because we did nothing to stop it. Don't let me tell you that again.
No, we're going to tell you again. We're going to tell you again and again. It's part of, look, the reason I do this show, and I know there's some people who listen to what I do, and some of you are going to be new to it. I mean, I'm hoping there are people who have never heard me do these kinds of broadcasts before who say, geez, that was some important stuff. Because we need to discuss these things. We need to have conversations because you can't have actions without having knowledge. And that's what we're asking you to do. We're not asking you to even take our word for it. Don't take our word for any of this stuff. Especially that trust stuff I was telling you about. Just remember the word trust. It's not trust as a virtue. I mean, like, I trust you. That's not what they're talking about. They're talking about trusteeship. This idea that they are above us and that we're beneath them. And our silence allows it. So I do this show every week on radio and then as a podcast, which this is almost a relaunch of Let's Talk Native, because I've kind of more concentrated more on the radio show that I do in New York and Washington and not enough on this. That's part of the reason I came to Akwesasne.
You see this circle on this wall? That's something every single one of our people should know. This is what makes us who we are. This is what gives us the right to defend for our children and our grandchildren. This is what makes us Ungwehungwe. And this points out to us what our responsibilities are. And our people, we don't know this anymore as a people. And we have the responsibility, those of us who remember what was told to us, to pass this on. And that, because everybody needs to know this. Everybody needs to know this because then they'll understand why these people have absolutely no right, no authority to sell. And the thing is that if we don't stand as who our ancestors worked to protect us, this is what protects us. And right now, fighting about all this stuff, we're using their system. It's all about their system. And we say that they don't have any right, but yet we're intervening in all of these court cases, all of these negotiations, when we're not standing by Deagojokwan Haksa. We're not standing by that which unifies our people, strengthens our people. We're not using that. We're not standing as who we are. And all of our arguing and everything else, we're doing it in a foreign language instead of using our own language. Our own language and their language is not the same. It's a totally different worldview. The thing is, they're of the culture of possession. We are not the people of the culture of possession. We are a people who are belonging to the land, not the land belonging to us. We're only here for a short time, but there's generations coming who are going to need this land. They're going to need the opportunity to enjoy their birthright. I got to put a cotton ball here.
Paul has been doing my show with me for years, and invariably he starts to pound on the table. He gets excited. So I don't know. Yeah, if you ever see Paul on my show and he's wearing big fluffy mittens, you'll know why. All right, look. I mean, a couple of things. As I said, I do this show so people can think and perhaps apply what we call critical thinking. I mean, Paul, you've said over and over again, when you hear something, dissect it. Make it make sense to you. And if you're hearing something that doesn't make sense, then investigate. Find out so it's your truth. I mean, we have this big thing about confusing belief and knowledge. Belief is what you're told. Belief is what the church is based on. Knowledge is what you experience. The best any of us can do as teachers and educators is bring you to a place where you can realize your own knowledge. So I've got to give a shout out to the People's Voice. They've got all of these land claim documents posted, so it's all available. I also got to give a shout out to CKWE Gwe Radio in Dandenega for helping us get this word out, and I think they're actually broadcasting what we're doing here live on their radio in Dandenega. And I do encourage people, take this video that's on Facebook, and when it gets posted on YouTube, share it. Get as many people involved in this. If you know people, educate them. Share this. Share what we're talking about here, and encourage people to find these documents. See what's being done, because if you don't have the information, it doesn't mean that you're not going to get screwed in the long run. I mean, it's like what you hear the old story when an elder asks one of these religious guys, "If I didn't know anything about your heaven and hell and your Jesus and your God, if I never heard this, would I still burn in hell for not believing it?" And he said, "No." "Then what the hell did you tell me for?" So, I mean, nothing's going to change if you put your head in the sand. And that's kind of what we're saying here.
Okay, we're encouraging people to make it their business to know. Never mind going by this yaga. Today, we become a yaga society because yaga means yagawa. That they had said, but we didn't see it with our eyes. We didn't hear it with our own ears. We didn't experience any of this thing. So we're taking that what they told us is the way it is. That's a rumor. That's gossip. And in our ways, in that circle, it tells us not to listen to rumors and gossip, but to find out what is the truth. It's the truth you have to go by. Not to be misled. Not to have faith that somebody's telling you what's right. The thing is, no. Find out what is the truth. Okay, I'm banging the table again.
You don't have to bring it up. Just stop. Yeah. No, I mean, it is. Look, if you're hearing these words here said today on this program, and words that have been said in past shows or in future shows, you don't have to take our words for it.
That's right.
You can check the stuff out yourself. Find out what's been happening. Learn what really happens in these so-called land claims. Learn what trust land really means. Understand what you're surrendering and who you're surrendering. That it's your own future. It's your own children. Look, we live in a strange world right now. I mean, some of us have, the years are starting to tick up. But I'll tell you, in our lifetime, there's things that we've seen that show where things are going. Everything from climate change to political unrest in the United States. I mean, we've seen the United States become more and more dysfunctional. You know, the more they crash, the more their systems crash, the more vulnerable we become if we don't step up and defend ourselves and defend our, who we are, our identities. And our identities are not the Mohawk Council of Akwesasne. They aren't the St. Regis Mohawk tribe. I don't know what a St. Regis Indian is. Apparently, it has something to do with praying. I mean, it's a praying Indian.
It's from heaven.
It's from heaven. But I got to tell you, if you have served in the U.S. or Canadian Armed Forces, or if you have family members that have, and you are very, very proud of that, yet you won't step on this, then shame on you. If you are going to demonstrate your loyalty or even risk your life to defend the United States or Canada, and you won't step up on this, then shame on you. If you're going to join in their political system, run for their offices, vote for their candidates, but you're not going to step up on this, then shame on you. This is who we are. The land is who we are. All that other stuff, it's MCA. It's St. Regis Tribal Council. It's these other things that have crept in. Yes, including the Code of Handsome Lake. Because that's just another church. So if you've done all of those things and you're not prepared to investigate this and tell your friends and your neighbors and your family, and then ultimately do what you need to do to stop this, then shame on you. It's why we do this. Yes, am I trying to incite people? Damn right I am. But what I'm trying to incite you to do is be responsible. And look, if I offend you, I'm not going to apologize. Because I'm offended. You know what I'm offended by? I'm offended by the years that some of us has put into this thing. And some of us have been dragged to jail. Some of us have been physically abused. Some of us have gone to prison. And we've sacrificed times with our family. Not just in terms of years in a prison cell, but we sacrifice time with our family doing this very thing. And we don't do it. We don't do it for fame and glory. Look, I am by no means a viral sensation. We are talking about hundreds, maybe 1,000 or so people that generally hear the show. My shout out to CKWE. You guys have helped me over the years attract listeners. But you know what? Just as we can attract listeners, we can lose them. And look, if I say something that's offensive, if Degarundige say something that maybe, kind of offends you a little bit, we're not gonna apologize.
I would never do that.
Yeah, you do it all the time. You always yell and beat on the table too. No, I mean, because we're doing it for you. We're doing it because of our commitment to the people in our communities. I'm not doing this for New York State. Or the counties, and I'm sure as shit not doing it for the tribal councils or the band councils or any tri-council. And in fact, no matter who sells you out, They need to be held accountable, and you need to rein them in. And you need to cast them away from you and not allow them to assert authority that they never had and never will have. But your silence will allow them to do things that you have every opportunity and every right to stand up to.
Now, my wife and I, every morning we talk, and she's asking me, why do you keep doing what you're doing? Why are you always out there on the road? Why are you always going to all these meetings? Why you do what you do? You know, you're getting older now, and you're still out there. She says, why are you doing this? And I point to my two grandsons playing on the floor. I said, that's why I'm doing it. Because if I don't do this, what guarantee do I have that somebody else is not doing it for my grandchildren? I know me, by doing what I do and trying to pass this on to them, giving them who they are, that I only can guarantee that I can do it. I know there's other people that work just as hard, but I can't speak for them. I can only speak for me. And every so often, I got to remind her, you know? But that's just the way it is. When he talks about we sacrifice a lot, we sacrifice a lot of that time and energy that we could be spending with our children, our grandchildren, and so on. But these things are important. Somebody's got to continue. You know, and the thing is that we don't get paid for what we do. Some people think that because we travel and we speak all over that we're making all kinds of money. Geez, we're lucky if they pay our expenses. Half the time we're paying out of pocket to do these things.
I don't even have a beaded vest. No, I mean, look, I'm on the radio in New York City and Washington, D.C. I'm not a paid host. I have to volunteer my time to do that. And it's not just about volunteers. It's about paying. Look, even to do what we're doing here, I've got a dozen subscription services that I've got to have just to do this in the way that I do it. So everything has an expense to it. And the biggest expense is what we sacrifice with our families. So we're not asking you to do something that, you know, that we ourselves haven't done. We're asking you to be responsible. And that's really what our ask is. And we're going to continue to do that. And we're going to provide you with the information. Whatever it takes, we're going to light a fire under people to try to get them to move. Because, again, we can't say it enough. Your silence is consent. And the only way you're going to stop this kind of abuse, and look, it's real easy to say, well, the state did this. It's real easy to say the feds did it. We can blame residential schools and we can blame colonization. But these are our neighbors doing this shit to us. I mean, that's the people we can see every single day. I mean, this is the responsibility that we have. And look, most of us, we have friends and relatives in every Native community. You know, every one of us has a relative in another community or several. So every one of us has an opportunity to share some of this message and let people know. I mean, and that's really all we're asking, is spread the word. I ask, if you listen to the show, share it. And if you don't agree with me, then look, I can't respond to every comment and question while I'm doing the show, but I will afterwards. We can have dialogue, because beyond doing the shows, I do post commentary on social media. And I'll answer a question. And if I don't know the answer, I'll find the answer, or I'll direct you to find the answer.
I tell to people, get a hold of John Cain. He knows a lot. But if he doesn't know, just call me back.
Yeah, if I don't know, I'll ask him. It's absolutely the luxury of me rekindling this podcast, the Let's Talk Native podcast, here in Akwesasne. Because, look, between, you know, COVID and family obligations, I haven't traveled up here to this community often enough. And unfortunately, I can't travel to some communities on the Canadian side for other reasons that that are also tied to all of this stuff. But I can come here, and I will come here. I was asked last week in the Longhouse, this is, where the hell you been? I said, be careful what you wish for. You might see me a lot more often than you care to. So I say that to you. Look, if you're listening, I thank you for welcoming me into your ears and into your head, and for giving me an opportunity to have Paul beat on the table in front of you as well.
Yes.
So, but do something with the information. Step up. You know, be heard. We have a lot of power, but we have it as a people. Individuals, look, we can do things as individuals, but they will never have the same meaning as when we do it as a people. We have an opportunity to fix some of this stuff and perpetuate our presence on our mother, on our homelands. We should be looking at Eddie. I mean, look, part of the reason Ganyange exists is because we took land back. And we did it because there are people in this room, yourself is one, you sat in that Grand Council, and they said, we need to reacquire our lands. And they said, and they literally said it, by hook or by crook. So by whatever means necessary, we need to reacquire our land. So yeah, some of this land that has white people on it, I'm not saying we got to force them off at gunpoint the way they did it to us. I'm not opposed to encouraging them to leave by whatever means necessary.
No, I'll remind people here in Nakujasa. Years ago, there was an island here in the river called Stanley Island. And the call went out for people to come and to take that island back. And many of us came, and we finally got all the white people off that island. You know, it kind of got a little bit crazy when just us young guys were on that island, like when we were that guy's age. But we got those white people off that island. And after we got them all off, and then the bank council turned around, and they leased the land right back out or whatever they did. You know, all the sacrifice the people made, and these same idiots sold or leased that island back out. And they had never had the right to do it. They did not rid that island of the infestation. We did. We, the people, did it.
And by some estimations, 70% of the native population lives out of our communities. So they live in the cities, they live in these places, because we don't have the land base to support our own people. And I don't mean just a place to have a home, because we have to earn livings on this land. It's not enough to just have a trailer park on our territories. We have to have land that we can live, have lives on. And for the most part, we're told every single day, well, you're going to have to go to the city, and you're going to have to work iron, you're going to have to do this, you're going to have to get your an education so you can work for some white company. And we're told that over and over again. We even measure success by how well we do in their world. We're not measuring success by how much land we get back. So we have to ask ourselves, who are we? Are we merely the descendants of a people? Or are we those same people? Are we unwe unwe? Because our actions are saying otherwise. And I'm not saying that for everybody. Now, I think there are people who put their heart and soul into maintaining their identity and asserting that identity in many different ways. But unfortunately, there are still people in our midst that are selling us out all the time. Look, as I said, we could talk for hours. And we will continue to do that. We will have show after show after show on this issue and other issues. Because there are issues involving the environment and the fact that in this community, in spite of its beauty and having this incredible river that flows through, there are cancer clusters here. There are people who are suffering from the illnesses that are imposed on them by the by corporations. By the U.S., by Canada. So yeah, we're going to do shows. We're going to address these issues. We're going to talk about the battles that we have with taxation. 100 years ago, they declared we were citizens. Today, when we stand up to them, they have the gall to say, you're a Canadian citizen. You've got to pay your taxes. They'll say, you're an American citizen. You've got to pay your taxes. So, we better, again, revisit who we are. Are we Canadians? Are we Americans? Or are we unwe unwe? And that's a choice that we make. It's not just what we say. We make that choice with our actions, with what we do. And I'll say, if we remain silent over this, silence is an action. It's a refusal, and refusing to act is still an action. So if we remain silent, come May 8th, they're going to submit a bunch of documents saying that everybody concurs. Everybody agrees. They want to sell the land out. And then come July, a week after the United States celebrates its Independence Day, they're going to do a signing ceremony, and they're going to announce and cheer what a great job they've done. And if you remain ignorant to what they're doing, the information's available. There are some fine people who've done a great job putting all of their information together, including their bullshit referendums, their refusal to do referendums. I have to go downstairs. All right. Don't bang on the wall on your way down.
I'm not.
So, again, I want to thank you guys for tuning us in, and I encourage you to stay connected to this podcast and to these videos. We're going to do more. We're going to address these issues, including this issue more. The intent, we were going to, frankly, we were going to have some people from Aquasasi that were going to be on the show, but a little illness struck, so I got stuck with Paul. and again, some of the best programs I've done in the past featured my friend Dagarun Dege, explaining both issues associated with the language, the culture, and reminding us who we are. And again, I can't state it more clearly than that. We have to define who we have to assert our identity. So I want to thank you for listening, and I want to remind people that this is Let's Talk Native. I'm John Kane. Nyawe.